Hey, everybody.
Hey.
We're coming at you with a special little bonus episode of the podcast today. We have a friend at Potter Violins named Robin Sullivan, and she is an awesome technician and luthier in the shop that you've heard us talk about many times. And we wanted a chance to highlight her because the world of women in luthery is one that's growing, but not necessarily quite caught up with our male counterparts. So we wanted to get a chance to know Robin and get to know her origin story and how she came into that life. And yeah, it was kind of a cool conversation, wasn't it?
Yes, it was really great. It was great to hear from her and hear about her challenges and how she's grown through the field, what she's observed from behind the bench. And she was actually telling us about some really exciting new things that are going to be popping up to highlight women in luthery. And one of them is an event that's going to be starting here at Potter Violins in May. So it's called the Women Luthiers International Exhibit. It's going to be here in Washington, D.C. from May 3rd through the 11th. And then it's going to be up in New York in June. So you can see Robin's Instagram at rsullivanviolins. And you can follow her there for updates on it. But if you're interested in checking out, we will definitely be checking it out because it's nice and local to us.
Yeah.
And we find it super interesting to see all these beautiful things these women have been working on.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't you just think the whole workshop aspect is just this kind of cool experience. And I don't know, maybe we can share it online too. We took some photos backstage with her inside the workshop and got some footage when we were there over the summer. And it's really neat. So I'm glad we're able to highlight her and highlight our sponsor Potters in this way, who we of course love, as you all know. And we hope you enjoy this mini episode with Robin Sullivan.
Welcome to the Musician Centric Podcast. We are two freelance violists living and laughing our way through conversations that explore what it means to be a professional musician in today's world. I'm Steph.
And I'm Liz. And we're so glad you've joined us. Let's dive in.
Well, today we have Robin Sullivan, who is a luthier in the workshop at Potter Violins here in the Metro DC area. And we're so excited to have you, Robin. We've known you for a little while, just coming into the shop. And we thought it would be super interesting for our listeners and audience to hear some perspectives from women in the workshop. We don't hear a lot about you guys. And it occurred to us that there might be a lot of people out there, a lot of women who might be interested in getting into luthery and doing all the technical things that happen behind the scenes. So we were curious about how does someone get into this field of work if they don't have any experience at it at the moment?
Well, hi, Liz and Steph. Thank you for having me.
Sorry, I jumped right in with you, Robin, but you were such a pro. I was like, she's right just going to be able to go.
I can roll with it. Yeah. How to get into luthery? Well, I personally got into it because, I mean, I fell in love with the violin at the age of 5. We went to a friend's house and the friend's daughter was playing. And to me, it was just the most beautiful, amazing instrument in the world. And afterwards, I asked my mom if I could have lessons. And she said, well, no, not right now. And I ended up asking for 2 years straight. And for my 7th birthday, she told me, like, okay, you have 2 choices. You can get your ears pierced, which is another thing I'd been asking for, or you can get violin lessons. So I chose violin lessons. And that's how I started on my path. I played violin all the way through high school. And then my senior year of high school, switched to viola, because I had to play the Bruch concerto for a competition, and that just killed the E string for me. I did not enjoy practicing all up in 5th, 6th, 7th position. So viola was a lot more fun. And it was after I graduated high school, I went to a music camp, and that's where I got to play viola again. And much to the chagrin of my violin teacher, who was leading the camp and had been trying to discourage me from switching to the viola, saying it was going to destroy my violin technique.
Oh, rude. Was this the same area where they like switch people from being left-handed to right-handed?
Sounds like fake news.
Seems like that same kind of like
I don't know. He's a very sweet violin teacher, but everyone sure. has their biases and he's on his own journey. But it was at that camp where an instrument was breaking before every single performance that I had an epiphany that I would like to know how to fix these instruments. Wait, I'd really like to know how to make them. That's what I want to do for a career, because I'd also always been very crafty with my hands. I liked sewing and like crocheting, knitting, cross stitch, like all that kind of stuff. Very handsy. I mean, I did go to undergrad, but for my senior project, I was able to find a violin maker who was willing to take an apprentice, Jeffrey Ovington, who was who I apprenticed under. And I didn't recognize at the time how unusual that is. Most violin makers do not want to take on apprentices. Yes. Well, because it takes up a lot of time and energy and effort because the tools are specialized. Sharpening is its own realm of things if you want to have tools that are sharp. I mean, there's so many different aspects to it. So I was very lucky that Jeffrey welcomed me into his workshop and his home. And for my senior year, we co-created a violin together. And
really so cool.
There's a school for
a red something.
School. The Red Wing.
The Red Wing School for Repair. They've been around a while, but it's only a year-long program. And while many people can get a lot of good basic repair skills and some basic tool skills, I mean, I think it's similar to musicians where you can put in all the time and all the practice, but there's still so much you have to do when you're done with schooling. Like schooling is only a fraction of what you need to do. You need to learn the business side of things. You need to learn how to market yourself. You need to, you know, network. So there are these schools, but if you really want to get into the industry, you just have to keep throwing yourself at it and, you know, find your people. Because not every person, you know, is willing to teach or willing to help or comes from a different background or sometimes just has, you know, a communication style that does not work with others or only a select group of people. So it's really just, I mean, to get into it, you just have to keep grinding away, keep your tools sharp and just keep going and spend a lot of time being underpaid and underappreciated.
Sure. Oh. So with all that in mind, I mean, the challenges are real. What do you love about it? I mean, what are your favorite things about luthery and what keeps you going?
I always love working with my hands. That makes me really happy and centered, and to be able to right now just fix instruments or just make instruments better. That's one of my favorite things is when, you know, someone comes in and their instrument either hasn't been sounding right or there's been an accident, and to be able to be the person that has that magic touch that brings it all back together, that is able to, you know, fix the problem that no one else has the experience or know-how or tools to do. But after you've done it 100 times, like you hear that one buzz and you're like, oh, let me just get these two things. I'll be right back.
I love it. You guys are like the most excellent form of like car mechanics. You know?
Yeah. It does turn into that because it's a lot of descriptions of the sounds.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Really, there's this, my dad was a mechanic. He was an auto mechanic and he worked in a service station for almost most of his life. And actually, one of my very favorite podcasts to listen to, and it was a radio show first, was Car Talk.
Oh yes.
Do you know Car Talk?
Yes. I know Click and Clack.
Click and Clack.
Brothers. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's so hilarious. And it just strikes me that like you guys probably get a lot of that. Yeah. Like, oh, I've heard that before. Is that a, you know, 18th century French violin? Oh, yes, of course. Yes, they have this problem.
Of course the E is nasal and the G is not enough. Yeah, that's just how they are.
So we started this conversation by talking about how you are a woman in the shop back there. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously, I think, an underrepresentation, although it seems like that's changing a little bit in terms of women in luthery. Can you speak to any of the experiences you've had in terms of being underrepresented in that way? Have there been challenges with that? And do you see the landscape of all of that changing as you've been in the career now for several years?
Yeah, I do see it changing. And I know for a fact it was much less friendly before I started. I don't know if when I mentioned Marilyn Wallen, if that was still recording or not, but it was. Marilyn Wallen is one of the main like big women figures of our field. She's just made so many wonderful instruments and has been so instrumental in the organization of like our VSA. She's been the president and such. And I've had the pleasure of chatting with her numerous times. And I know that originally she was not going to finish her time at the Chicago School of Violin Making because women were not allowed to make cellos. It was considered unladylike and women were just flat out, nope, it was not ladylike to make cellos.
No.
And she was not allowed to make a cello.
Oh my God.
So she left.
If it's ladylike to play the cello, then I think you should be able to make a cello.
I mean, sexism knows no bounds.
Yeah,
these
right.
Reasons are there.
Oh my God.
Because control, power, all those things. But she was able to come back and she was able to make a cello. And I believe she did graduate. But I do know many people who don't graduate from the school. And if they're talented enough or have the right connections, can get jobs and go right out. So, well, that's one major change. Now there, no one bats an eye at a woman making a cello, which is great.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I made one. I mean, it can be a little harder being in the back as a woman. When I was younger, I definitely had the attitude of like, oh, it's fine. You know, it's not that bad, but it's the cumulative exposure. And now that I've been in the industry going on, I don't know, 15 years or more than that now, you just start to notice how when you're in a room of men and you are the minority, how quickly your voice is dismissed if it is listened to at all, you know, which has its ups and downs. I hear a lot of things. I'm very good at listening.
You know, all the hot goss.
Taking everything in.
You know, even if no one wants to know my opinion, I have. And during the pandemic, there's a Women in Lutheran group that started. We started just doing informal Zooms, and that has turned into a much bigger group. We have over 750 women on our Facebook page. So, and it's open to any woman at the bench, any instrument. We've got guitar luthiers, uke luthiers, some people do harps, and it's a very supportive group. And being able to talk to other women in the field was like, it was so refreshing to hear like my stories coming out of other women's mouths. Like, you've heard this happening. We're like, oh my God, yes. All the time. When a man walks in and it's you and you're the luthier, and then they look to the man next to you who is not the luthier and asks him all the technical questions. And you're like, I'm the one wearing an apron with the tool in my hand.
Yeah.
But fine.
Yeah. It's a wild thing. It's so funny you brought that up. It just has me thinking about, I have that experience too of, I remember being really young and like, if you're in a group of guys, I was always like one of the guys. I would always just say, oh yeah, I'm like one of the guys. Totally one of the guys. Mm-hmm. And now in my life, I'm like standing in a group of guys and I'm like, actually, no one's really listening to me. I mean, it depends on your company, right? And I assume the shops it depends on the shops as well. And I, if you want to speak about the environment at Potter specifically, please feel free.
It is unique.
I feel like it's at least from the outside, it seems like a much more tolerant place. But yeah, that's just something we all had to run up against. And I appreciate being our age and recognizing these things and talking about them more. And I hope that all that continues to happen is that these conversations happen younger and younger and younger until they don't need to happen anymore. You know, like, wouldn't that be amazing?
Exactly. I had a mentee last summer and we were talking a little bit about working around men. And she's like, listening to her was like listening to me, you know, when I started. And I'm like, oh, you sweet summer child.
Well, the beautiful thing is that it's probably different for them.
It's a little bit different now. And I will say, you know, thanks to the internet and social media in particular, the groups like Women in Lutheran, we are small, but, you know, we are able to reach out to each other much easier and support each other. And that group has been instrumental. Like, there's a couple ground rules, like no apologizing, because as women, we all have a bad habit of starting things off by apologizing. And we're like, no,
yep,
no need to apologize. Just state.
Yep. Love it.
And also no talking down, you know, because everyone's at different levels and different points of their journey. And what you might think is a move that a person possibly shouldn't have made, you don't need to say it that way. Yeah. And you can, there's always a better way, a more supportive, constructive way to phrase feedback or advice if it is asked for.
That's the key, really. That mm-hmm. is the key.
Yep.
Is mm-hmm. knowing what you're there for.
Yes. Yes.
It's not an advice forum, it's a support forum, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So important.
Oh, so wonderful.
So yeah, that's where there's, you know, on other social media groups where it's mixed gender, sometimes toes can get stepped on and egos can be vented, bruised, all of the above.
It's really interesting to consider that, you know, those forums are necessary for a reason, those places where it's just us mm-hmm. having those conversations.
Yes.
And it's good that you have that support in your field in that way too. That's really good to know.
Yeah. And I've heard the men say, we want a group like that too. And I'm like,
yeah,
go ahead.
Go make one.
If you had it, you'd destroy it. Oh, wait, hasn't that been all of the ones that have been before? Wait, it already exists. That's why we had to make our own.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, you know, the VSA, which I'm a member of, and a lot of the other groups, they are trying. They are trying, but it was created by white men. And it bears the hallmarks of its creators. So, you know, there's still things to work through.
Yeah, sure. For sure.
But I love that you're on the path towards making it more inclusive. It sounds like you're kind of at the vanguard generation of really bringing it.
Trying to.
Yeah, bring it around.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think there's more and more women who are at least being or feeling more comfortable to be more vocal and more visible, which is wonderful to see, because I feel that even if someone hasn't had as much experience as me, it's still a different experience and they could teach me something that I never would have thought of, even though I, you know, have been in the industry longer. Again, you need to hear other people's experiences and you never know what that's going to teach you or give you insights on that maybe you had a blind spot to before.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Robin. If we have mm-hmm. anyone listening who's young and interested in the world of Luthery, where would you recommend mm-hmm. they start in a resource?
For resources, oh man, there's a bunch. I mean, it really depends on what you want to get into. Are you into making? Are you into restoration? Are you into identification? You know, there's lots of different Facebook. You can look through Facebook groups. There's a lot of different Facebook groups of different levels for making and repair and even selling old tools, which everyone loves a good bargain on an antique tool. So, I mean, there's those. And if there's local shops that people go to, they could ask questions if they feel comfortable asking questions. And then, you know, maybe if you talk to a luthier and ask them where you should go, because I know I do occasionally get those questions from people and I either direct them to schools or other resources, right, depending on what they are and what they're capable of.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having
Thanks
me.
Thanks so much for making time for us.
Absolutely. You can find Robin at Potter Violins on any given Tuesday through Saturday.
Tuesday through Saturday, open hours. I'm in the back. I'm doing the insurance evaluations. I'm setting up conos. I'm fixing broken instruments. And I'm trying to build a violin right now that I hope to have done by spring. So.
Well, good luck with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you loved this episode, consider writing us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Thanks also to our season sponsor, Potter Violins.
If you'd like to support the podcast and get access to bonus content, consider joining our Patreon community.
You can buy all your musician-centric merch, including shirts, water bottles, koozies, and a variety of other fun items.
Our theme music was written and produced by J.P. Wogeman and is performed by Steph and myself.
Our episodes are produced by Liz O'Hara and edited by Emily McMahon.
Thanks again for listening. Let's talk soon.